Escucha Gracias a la Vida los sábados desde las 11 de la mañana hasta la 1 de la tarde en Weiru FM 89.9 en Blue Hill, 99 en Bangor, o por el internet en weiru.org. Listen to Gracias a la Vida every Saturday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. only on WERU FM 89.9 in Blue Hill, 99.9 in Bangor, or streaming and podcasting weru.org.
Support for WERU comes from Inner Tapestry, Maine's holistic journal, celebrating and supporting life, featuring alternative health and natural living articles, calendar listings, and a directory of resources available at health food stores and alternative health centers. 799-7995 or innertapestry.org. Support for WERU also comes from Quantum Insulators LLC in Belfast, serving Midcoast Maine as licensed dealers of the Isony Insulation Foam products, including renewable and recyclable insulation content. More information at 1-866-578-WARM or www.quantuminsulators.com.
It's just a few seconds before 10 o'clock and you are tuned to WERU-FM 89.9 Blue Hill, 99.9 Bangor, and streaming online at weru.org. Common Ground Radio with your hosts from MOFCA is up next.
Good morning and welcome to Common Ground, MOFCA's hour-long discussion of food and local agriculture and all those exciting things happening here around the state of Maine. My name is Cheryl Wixon and I work for MOFCA as organic marketing consultant, and I'm joined in the studio today with two ladies that have family cows. And yes, the topic of our program this morning is the family cow. So to my right is Diane. Good morning, Diane. Thanks for being with us. Why don't you tell us a little bit about what you do for MOFCA?
I'm Diane Chavera, and I work for MOFCA as the organic livestock specialist. So I work with all the dairy farmers and sheep and goat and pig and lots of chicken farmers out there. So I answer their questions and help them as much as I can.
And we're also joined by Christine Baker from Sunnyside Farm in Waldoboro. Good morning, Christine.
Good
Thanks
morning.
For being with us. Yes. Now, both of you ladies have cows. This is a pretty exciting time. And let's see, Diane brought me some milk and Christine brought me some cheese. So this is the best part. So tell me a little bit about your cow, Diane, and your dairy situation, and how'd you get into this anyway?
Well, one of those things, I've always wanted a cow, and I just happened to come into this cow. Somebody wanted to get rid of her, and so I got her for free, a cow and a donkey, and now we have a calf. So I've had the cow for 4 years now, I think, 3 years, and she's real sweetheart. She's a milking Devon cow, so mm-hmm. she's beautiful, dark red color. She's about the same color as an Irish setter, and she's a real sweetheart. So I'm very lucky that she's so well behaved, because she has horns, which can be an issue. Some people feel that having horns on a cow can be a dangerous situation, and I guess if I got in the wrong place when she swung her head around to do, you know, to scratch herself or something, it could be a problem. But she's actually very good about it. And if I squeak, she just gets all excited and it's like, oh, I'm sorry. And she backs right off. So it's great.
Oh, I think, are we joined on the phone this morning with Megan Gerritsen from Bridgewater? Good morning, Megan.
Hi, Cheryl. How are you?
I'm doing great. And this is another milking maid, shall I say?
Yes.
Yes. Why don't you tell us a little bit about, I know you folks have a cow up there, way up north, as you folks say, on Wood Prairie Farm. Tell us a little bit about your cow.
Okay. We have two Irish Dexter cows. And we started off probably 35 years ago with Jersey cows, which is sort of the cow of choice for the homestead farmer, especially back then. But over the years, they bred them larger and larger, and 6 gallons of milk was just too much for me.
Too much for you and that tribe of yours, you mean?
That's right. So we have a couple of Irish Dexters, and I just adore them. They're about three-quarter size, half size, or three-quarter size, and they give 2.5 gallons of milk a day, which is perfect.
And now, are you milking both of those?
Well, not at the same, never at the same time, no.
Mm-hmm.
But one tends to calve in the spring and one tends to calve in the fall. And so I've got a lot of flexibility, which is really great for my life. I only milk one at a time.
Okay. So you're not inundated with and flooded with lots of milk then.
Right. Yeah, I need sanity because I have another job too.
Yeah, besides milking cows. Yeah,
right.
Picking a few potatoes, you mean?
Right.
Yeah, right.
Yep.
Oh, and Christine, why don't you just bring us up to speed with what you have for on your family farm with a cow?
Well, right now we have Maggie, which is a Jersey, and her baby, which we're raising for meat for next winter. And we started out with Dexters. We're just the opposite of you, Megan.
Oh!
We started with a Dexter that we actually weren't able to breed, and we fell into a Jersey instead.
So, oh, good.
And before that, we had goats. And the way we manage our animals, the goats were just, you know, you had to milk so many goats to get even close to the same amount of milk that Maggie gives us. It just didn't seem, it seemed like it was a little bit easier to manage one animal than a few animals.
Oh, so we have three different breeds.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Yep.
And I'm kind of curious, and I think maybe I'd like to, our listeners might be too. What kind of a commitment does it take to having a family cow? I mean, obviously they need to be milked every day.
Yep.
Kind of limits the traveling.
Yes.
The trips
yes.
to.
Well, unless you have nice neighbors or friends or somebody who likes to come over and give you a hand once in a while, and that gives you a break.
Mm-hmm.
So, but yes, you have to be there every day to milk the cow, and I. Personally, I only milk my cow once a day. I've got her, so she only, you know, I just take milk from her once a day. And that's an option for some people. I think it depends upon the level of production of the cow. I only get a gallon of milk a day from my cow at this point. And she's, well, she calved in last May, so it's quite a ways along in her lactation. So that, you know, she's not given as much. I mean, in the beginning, when I first weaned the calf, I was getting almost 2 gallons a day, but she's gone down some, so
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
which is fine for me. You know, plenty of milk.
And when do you usually milk?
In the morning. That's the easiest for me, because then I can do that before I head out to go to work, and if I have late meetings or whatever, I don't have to be there. My husband can manage to take care of her as far as feeding her and making sure she has water and everything.
And how about you, Megan? How often do you milk?
When I milk twice a day. I just love to milk.
Mm-hmm.
But having said that, I do, and it varies, you know, lactation to lactation, but my goal is, and what I've succeeded with in the past some of the time, is to have an extra calf around so that I can milk once a day, say, during potato harvest.
When you're really right out straight, yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Or when we do go away camping, and I wouldn't miss that, so having an extra calf around, you can always find somebody who will feed and can let the calves in to milk and then take them back out. So usually I milk twice a day. Sometimes, like, Diane said, once a day, but the Dexters give me that flexibility
mm-hmm.
because they can, with a Jersey, I never really felt comfortable leaving a calf on because that's just too much milk for one calf. Now, if you had three calves, probably.
You had some pretty fat little calves. Yeah, right.
And I do have one cow that I can hire somebody to milk for me,
mm-hmm.
and I have one cow that I don't, that I only use calves. It's either me or the calves, because she wasn't raised around people, so.
So you feel it's safer just as far as for
I
you?
I just don't want anybody to get their fingers kicked or anything.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And how about you, Christine, with your Jersey? You milk twice?
I do, yeah, and really the amount of work isn't bad. In a given day, it's kind of the shoulder times of the day, and so it doesn't really interfere with almost anything that you're doing. It's right before breakfast and right around dinner time, And so it's really not a huge commitment that way. Like you said, where the commitment comes is actually trying to get away. And believe me, we've gone around a lot of times about what the best way to do that is, because I have a family. I want to go camping too. And we just rarely go on vacation. And so this year we're swapping milk with someone that will hopefully come and take care of the farm while we're gone next summer. And this past winter I had to go away. My mom was ill. And we fortunately had a neighbor we could ship her to for the couple weeks who has cows and is milking and was happy to take her. So having a relationship like that in the neighborhood is mm-hmm. really crucial, and we're happy to start that one.
Now, if folks are thinking about this and they can get beyond this commitment of the once or twice a day of milking, I'm sure there's many other types of things one needs to consider. What about, you know, housing and feed and these types of things, Diane?
Yeah, it can run the gamut as far as housing goes. You can have something as simple as a little three-sided shed, but that means you're out milking in a three-sided shed. Which, and I actually am still in that. I have a very nice barn, but it hasn't gotten doors on the front of it yet. So I basically am milking in an outside shed. And it was 14 below.
It was cold.
It was cold. And it's not so bad when you're actually milking, because you're holding on to those nice warm teats that are nice warm milk. But when it's when you get up and you're done and it's like, oh, man, I'm cold. My hands are cold. And I went in that morning and had to run them under hot water because they hurt.
They hurt, so, right.
But,
yeah.
But generally, you don't need that much. It's just a matter of trying to keep the wind and the cold off the animal. It's the wind and the wet that's the most problem.
Mm-hmm,
so,
mm-hmm.
But it's nicer, obviously, if you have something that's enclosed so you can be warm and cozy, too.
Mm-hmm. And hay storage.
Right, yep, and that's the other thing, hay storage. You have to have, it's a lot less expensive to buy your hay out of the field from the farmer, if you're going to have to buy hay, to buy it out of the field from the farmer during hay season and bring it home and have some place to store it. If you have to buy it over the course of the season, the price goes up because they're having to pay to store it. So,
right. Yeah. So, and how about you, Christine? Where do you keep your cow? You have a barn, too?
We have a barn. We have a beautiful barn, and there is a big hayloft, which is fortunate.
Yeah. And now, do you have to, aside from hay, what else, other types of feed requirements do we need to consider for our animal?
That really depends upon what your goals are. I don't feed any grain to my cow at all, so that's another reason that I only get a gallon of milk a day. If I gave her grain, I'm sure she would give a whole lot more milk than she's given. But she's doing fine with just eating her hay. She's not losing weight. I mean, she's thinner than she was when I first got her, but when I first got her, the people that had had her before were giving her too much grain, and she was quite the porky beast. She had huge fat pads around her tail. And they've kind of gone away now, and you can actually see her ribs a little bit, which is actually a sign of a healthier animal. It's just like us, you know.
So that's a good breed, then.
Yes, she's a very easy keeper.
Yeah, that's a great breed then.
Yeah, she does.
How about you, Megan? I know you do hay. What else do you do? Do you do grain or any supplements?
Well, we raise potatoes, so they get
they get some potatoes. I betcha.
They get chopped up potatoes and carrots, and you do want to chop anything that is the size of a windpipe into smaller pieces,
mm-hmm.
so they don't choke on it. So the Dexters get, you know, it also varies by animal. I have one animal who just stays fat on hay, and she doesn't get much of anything. And I have one who really does better if she has maybe a pound or two of grain or the equivalent in potatoes a day when she's milking. She's not milking this winter, so we're not feeding her much more than just good hay. It depends on the quality of your hay, too.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. What's the equivalent of in potatoes of a pound
Uh-oh,
or two?
Oh, you did.
I mean, just a guesstimate, just so people
potatoes
get an idea.
Potatoes are 80% water, mm-hmm. And they're good nutrition. So,
right.
If you have a 5-gallon bucket of potatoes at 25 pounds, you're talking that's probably 5 pounds of grain. I'm guessing 3 to 5 pounds of grain equivalent.
Yep.
And a cow can't eat unlimited quantities of potatoes because they as with any feed, you want to work them into it slowly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't want to just throw down a 5-gallon bucket in front of them. So,
yeah. Not unless you want an upset stomach.
Right. So they can. There's a lot of easily accessible nutrition in potatoes, and the ones that get gassy are going to get gassy.
Mm-hmm.
The ones that don't are going to be fine. So my fat cow, that's another reason she doesn't get much potatoes, because she'll get all gassy and I'll get all worried, and, you know, we'll spend the day walking back and forth to the barn, and at night she's fine again. It's like, holy mackerel, when will I learn that she just gets hay?
Yeah. Well, even the difference, like you talk about the different quality of hay, I get hay from a farmer that lives nearby, and the field varies, you know, in different places where he cuts it.
Yeah.
And I got one bale that was, I mean, it was beautiful hay. And I started giving that to the cow, and she went from having rather solid manure to having very runny manure. And it was just that difference with the level of protein in that grass. And that hay was so much higher that she ended up with really loose. I mean, it wasn't dangerous or she wasn't sick. It was just a reaction.
Fairly natural.
Yeah. So it's and it's a whole lot easier to clean up the dry stuff, let me tell you.
So I know we're in the midst of winter now, so we're obviously feeding hay, but what about as far as pasture is concerned? You must have your cows on pasture in the summer, right, Christine?
Yep. That's right. And they're on pasture now too. They're out in the pasture and there's plenty of things for them to browse on. It's not hay, but there's all kinds of stubble of old brambles and trees that are growing in the woods, and they have access to that, which I think is a really healthy thing for them.
That's great.
Yeah.
I grow sugar beets in the summertime in my garden, a couple rows of them, and they get a couple of beets every day. And we also go and raid the compost bin at the health food store, and you just wouldn't believe what they love to eat. It just goes down the hatch, old onions and avocados and
really
everything. Lemons, it just goes right down. They love it.
Now, do you have to cut them, chop them up for them?
I never have, although I can't understand how Megan gets worried, and I have had to think about keeping my fingers crossed. I have never had a problem, though, and I know that it can be. Mm-hmm. Megan, what do you do to chop yours up? Do you have some kind of, like, machine to do it?
This is potato country, and there used to be a lot of cows, so we have a potato grinder.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's got a little kind of 3-gallon hopper on the top, and you dump them in, and it's electric.
Uh-huh.
Flip a switch, and it chops them into, they're probably 1.5-inch cube type of, I mean, they're certainly not cubed, but pieces. And if I have, you know, if I have a run of large potatoes, I don't worry about those.
Mm-hmm.
They'll chew them.
Yeah, it's mm-hmm. just that in-between size, that egg size.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, people say that about apples, too. I've heard people say that
never,
you lost an animal to an apple.
This may be stupid, but I've never worried about apples. So.
Well, they are softer. I mean, you'd think it would be less of an issue. I mean, potatoes are hard. I mean, I'm assuming you don't cook them, right?
No, I don't cook them.
Yeah.
Right. So you're telling, and now, Christine, you don't, so your raids on the compost and the vegetables that you grow are basically beside the pasture and the hay, and that's what your animals get for feed?
No, I feed them grain. I feed her grain as well.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Yeah, and she's the type of cow that would turn to a skeleton if I didn't, and she wouldn't give it hardly any milk.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like I need to feed her grain or she would just disintegrate over the course of the winter. I like the point about the quality of hay, though. This winter we've had a big boom of milk. Usually in the wintertime, the amount of milk we get goes down in a huge way because the hay that we give them is off of our field, which isn't the best. And this year we weren't able to have our field hay. We don't have the equipment, so we're kind of at the mercy of a local farmer. And we got caught wind of some really a good deal on some second-cut hay, and she just has not gone down. We're in the milk gangbusters right now.
So. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the genetics of the animal really makes a whole lot of difference. I mean, we're talking about three different breeds here,
mm-hmm.
and then the individual variation in each one of the breeds makes a whole lot of difference. One cow, if her genetics are such that she's been bred to produce a lot of milk and used to being getting a lot of grain. If you take that animal and try and not give it grain, she's not only going to stop producing milk as much, but she's going to get really thin. Mm-hmm. So if you want to get an animal to get started with, you should be really aware of where you get it from. And ask the people, like, if you're getting a cow from somebody, well, you know, what kind of grain are they feeding it? And look at that animal to see how much flesh it's carrying before you buy one. It would be something to think about.
Also, in the shelter that you have, too, because I know that the Dexters are kind of bred to be outside all winter and love it, except they need a little place to get out of the wind. But Jerseys, they're from but the British Isles, and it just doesn't get that harsh there, and they need more of a protection.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, my cow's got a great winter coat on her. And, you know, it takes quite a bit to get it off of her in the springtime. Lots of brushing.
Well, for those folks that are just joining us, you are listening to Mofka's Common Ground on WERU 89.9 and 99.9 in Bangor and streaming at weru.org. Our program this morning is The Family Cow, and we have three families, three milkmaids with us today, and I'm having a blast learning about all these things. Like, I'd like to go home and get one of myself, but mm-hmm. Now you talked about buying hay from the field. That's the most economical way to do it. About how many bales should one plan on putting aside? That's, you know, I know it depends upon, as you said, Diane, the breed, but if one's trying to imagine, we got to have a barn, we got to have so much pasture, we got to have how much space, what do you think?
I don't know. I mean, the guesstimate usually that I've heard is about a bale a day. I mean, is that about what you're feeding, Christine?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And I feed that about that much, but I've got now, and I'm actually a little above that probably because I've got the cow and I'm feeding her calf, and the heifer was born in May, so mm-hmm. she's pretty good size. I mean, she's a beast. Whew. I didn't wean her until she was 6 or 7 months old, and she is just, and so she was on her mama just half day. I took her off. She was only on half of the day, and actually it was just during the daytime, and then I'd take her off at night so I'd be able to milk in the morning. So she's a beast. So she's eating a fair amount. And then I've got the donkey to feed, too. So I'm a little over a bale a day. So you want to calculate that for the season that you're going to be feeding them hay. And that really depends upon what your goals are and how much pasture you have available to feed the animal during, and what the quality of your pasture is during the season.
So when you say a bale of hay, you're talking primarily about more like the winter season when they're not going to be on the pasture.
Sometime in mid-October, beginning to mid-October till what, the beginning of May, something like that.
At least,
I feed a little under half a bale a day.
Okay, and how much pasture? I know it's all varies, but at least as a minimum, how much pasture should someone consider?
What you want to configure on is probably about an acre of pasture per cow.
Okay, all right.
So, and that's not just putting them out and leaving them in that big acre. That's moving them around in the acre during the season. You want to give them into little paddocks at a time and mm-hmm. move them over the course of that acre area over the course of the season.
What we did when we started out, which is a really, really great way to go for a family with one cow, is we used a tether.
Mm-hmm,
just
mm-hmm.
sort of an iron spike in the ground, about a half a crowbar, a piece of an axle, and a chain, and move her two times a day, maybe three times a day. You know, once in the morning, once in the evening. You can get a little longer or shorter chain, depending, and move her around, and boy, does that develop a beautiful rotated pasture land.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It really does. It doesn't take that much time, and certainly doesn't cost much of anything.
Mm-hmm. So we're sort of talking about what we need for housing, what we need for feed, what we need for pasture. What about water? I mean, obviously they have to have water.
Lots of water.
What about this time of year? Do you...
There's lots of different ways of dealing with it. I have one of those big black water tubs. It's mm-hmm. sort of a heavy rubber.
Yep.
And sometimes I have to dump it out and jump up and down on it and bang it and do all kinds of contortions in order to get the ice out. And so that, you know, you do that. But you have to water them at least a couple times a day and give them a good amount of water. It just depends upon what kind of regime. I mean, my cow is actually very spoiled, and she probably has water all day long. But some people, because I you know, we between my husband and I, we can kind of take care of it. But if you were only there in the morning and at night when you were milking, you could, that cow would learn to drink when the water was
right,
there.
Right, right. How about you, Christine? What do you?
I just use 5-gallon water buckets or those white buckets that you get from
the
drywall or whatever.
The pickle pails,
that's
right?
That's right, yep. And I put 3 out is what she needs right now for her and her calf in the morning, and I have one in the barn when she comes in at night, or 3 in the barn at
mm-hmm,
night.
Mm-hmm.
That's all she needs right now. Mm-hmm. Can I go back a minute,
sure,
though?
Sure, oh, yeah.
You know, we talked a lot about all these requirements for a cow, and all 3 of us right now are really fortunate to have these beautiful farms and barns and pasture, but you don't need that to have a cow. You can have a cow in your backyard if you need it, and you can always buy hay from a farmer nearby. You're just, you know, you're going to be adding some expenses to your production, but I don't think it would outweigh having a cow
having
altogether.
A cow. Yeah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And my sister, for example, lives in California. She lives in a neighborhood, and fortunately her neighbors don't seem to mind, but they have a little paddock in their 3/4 acre yard, and they just feed her, you know, food from neighboring CSAs, or they bring in hay, you know, as they need it.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a great setup and are able to live in the suburbs as well.
With a cow? What kind of a cow does she have?
She has a miniature Jersey.
Oh,
but they had Jerseys, and they've had Dexters, too. They've had it all, and they're experimenting with miniature Jerseys. But, you know, she's such a great role model to me because she doesn't have, you know, the beautiful Maine farm that mm-hmm. we're fortunate to have, and she's able to do the same thing that I am.
So some of our urban folks, mm-hmm. if they had at least some space so they could have a tether or some small paddock.
Yeah, I mean, all animals, just like us, they need a little bit of exercise, so they need a chance to be able to move around. You wouldn't want to keep them in a stall. I mean, ideally, that's, you know, a lot of conventional farms, that's what they do. The animal spends the whole winter in the stall.
Mm-hmm.
But it's best if they be able to move around.
Just like we're better off if we don't sit around and be couch potatoes,
right.
So to speak.
Exactly. Nothing wrong with potatoes.
No, I wonder, do you think I could feed potatoes to rabbits?
Yeah, why not?
Oh, I'm thinking of that. Yeah, geez.
Potatoes are a really good food source.
I know. I eat them at least once or maybe twice a day. Oh, shoot. Well, now we sort of talked about, I want to cover a couple more things, and then we're going to open up the lines for some folks to call in with some questions or comments. But any other health issues or challenges or things that one should consider? That's mm-hmm. the only thing.
Well, the biggest issue with cows, and everybody who has a cow will end up talking about it at one time or another, and that's mastitis. And there's lots of different ways to deal with it. And that's when the cow gets some kind of an inflammation in her udder. And it can come from having the calf on her and having the calf bonk her a little too hard and get a bruise in there. And then her milk comes out a little funny. It either looks a little clotted or a little bit gooey or lumps in there of some sort or another. And then, so how you deal with that? That's sometimes an issue. And you can deal with it. I use homeopathic remedies. Phytolacca seems to be the one that my cow responds to the most. That's usually the general one that people use for mastitis. But you can milk her out extra number times a day, and you can use herbal remedies. Some people use antibiotics, if that's what your choice is. And just giving the udder an extra massage when you do milk them, that helps.
Now, I'm assuming that all 3 of you milk by hand. Is that correct?
That's
right. Yeah, right. And about how long does that take? I know you find it very enjoyable and it's a relaxing thing.
It's about 5 minutes per gallon.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
She's got good hands, doesn't she?
Yeah. I know. I'm Subi is my cow is a lot. She's particularly slow, I think, because it takes me 20 minutes to a half an hour to milk her out, and that's me fussing a whole lot because I really don't want her, because I'm only milking her once a day. I really want to be careful to make sure that I empty her udder up out mm-hmm. really well. So the last probably at least 5-10 minutes is me rubbing her udder. You know, we wiggle it all around, and it's quite a funny operation, I think, if anybody was ever watching. But anyway, and then I milk those teats out, and I do that like 4 times before I quit, because I want to make sure she's really emptied out really mm-hmm. well before I quit.
How about you, Christine?
I'm in Megan's camp, about 5 minutes per gallon, I think is right.
I have a video on YouTube.
Oh, really? Is that on your website?
Yes, if you go to woodprairie.com, you can get to our YouTube, or go to YouTube and...
Oh, how fun. Oh, I'd love to see
that. Oh, I'll have to do that. Yeah. That'd be great.
I'm a bit of a nut for these creatures. Two things that, if we had time, Cheryl.
Yes, go for it.
Two things that I would, you know, pipe up with as far as health considerations mm-hmm. go. These cows are so great for my physical and mental health. I'm not a 20-year-old anymore. And so I feel really wonderful to have the chores of getting dressed outside to the barn every day, lifting, carrying, working. And it's not work to me, you know. I just love it out there in the barn. And I think that's going to, you know, that's going to be great for me. And also just the mental health of getting outdoors is quiet. Being with animals is good for people. Interacting with, you know, big, loving, hairy beasts.
it's your own mental health therapy, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And the other thing that when you're thinking about affording a cow or paying for hay is to do the other side of the math, too. If you get 2 gallons of milk a day, I don't know, give yourself $5 or $6 a gallon, give yourself some money for the yogurt, which is, you know, $5 or $6 a quart. If you have a 200-day lactation and 2 gallons a day,
Actually, it's usually like more like 300 days.
Yeah, right. You're right. 300. You're coming up with several $1,000 worth of food mm-hmm. that this cow is going to give you.
Mm-hmm.
So the hay that you buy, you know, if you buy 200 bales of hay at $4 a bale, that's only $800.
Right.
You know, you're making money on this cow.
So to speak.
And the baby, too.
Right.
And
well,
the,
that's
yeah,
right.
And the baby, too.
Yeah. You right. can really see yeah. why they're called cash cows, or where that expression came from, because they just keep giving.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah, it's true.
Right. So, well, let's talk about what they do give you. And what do we, you know, you must be luxurious in all the milk and all those wonderful products that you get. What do you do with all your milk, Christine?
Well, I have a lot of... I process a lot of it for our family. We have 3 kids, and the leftovers, I have friends and neighbors that take it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So when you say you process it, do you make it into yogurt and cheese? Or?
That's right, yep. Yogurt, cheese, kefir, and ice cream. And you know, we also have laying hens, and you know, eggs and cream are like the start of about a million wonderful things that think of.
Yeah, and the chickens love the milk, too. And it's whey. Right. You know, I when I do make cheese, I give all the whey to the chickens. They think it's great.
So. Now, Diane, I know you've started making some wonderful things, because I've been treated to them, some mm-hmm. yogurt and some yogurt cheeses. And
cottage cheese.
And oh, did you make cottage cheese?
I made cottage cheese. This year, it's my big blue ribbon prize I got at the Maine Cheese Guild this year.
Oh, good
and
for
it's,
you.
It's just because the milk is so good, I think. I have to give the credit to Subi. She deserves it. I just followed the recipe, but it was quite fun to
You'll have
get
to
that.
Give me the recipe.
Oh, yes. Right. I can send it
so
to you.
So, Megan, what do you do with yours? I know you've got a big tribe, and folks up there that are going to drink it anyway. So
right, yeah. Milk and yogurt is our main thing. I'm not a big cheese maker anymore. Pretty busy with the Wood Prairie mail order.
Mm-hmm.
So, but we can drink a lot of yogurt.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And a couple more questions, and I think we're going to open it up so we can let folks that have been listening call in. What's the life expectancy of a cow, and how often do you, I know you talk about freshening or breeding it once a year, and the other question I have before I lose it in my mind is, what do you do when you're not milking? What are you going to do for milk? Do you have to buy it?
What do I do?
Yeah, really. Yes, yeah. Well, you've got a setup, Megan. It sounds to me like you've got somebody going, a cow going all the time.
Most of the time. Although right now I'm in between, and so I go to the store and buy Maine moo milk.
Oh, yes, yes. Support Maine. Right.
Yes. Yeah. I'm lucky that one of our certified organic dairy farmers is in between me and where I go to the office, so I right. stop and see him and get milk out of his tank. So when
your cow is,
yeah.
And how about you, Christine?
We have a neighbor that has some milk as well. I was shocked, though, how much we used. I really didn't think we used as much as I couldn't believe the addiction.
Yes.
We don't eat yogurt when we don't have a cow fresh.
Oh, really? You don't? Well, so you just drink milk, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I want to do this, but some new studies done that the more dairy products and milk that you drink and consume, that the better your brain power is. I just read an article the other day. So you need it to keep smart.
Yeah, I better not slack off then.
No.
Oh, shoot. Well, you're listening to your community radio, WERU-FM, 89.9 in Blue Hill and 99.9 in Bangor, and streaming worldwide on WERU.org. This is Common Ground, MOFCA's hour-long conversation about food and local agriculture. And today we're talking about the family cow. We are joined in the studio with Diane Chavera, our livestock specialist, Christine Baker from Sunnyside Farm, and Megan Gerritsen from Wood Prairie Farm in Bridgewater is on the phone. And we'd like to invite you folks, if you'd like, to call in and ask questions or give us your comments. The number here in the studio is 469-0500. Again, the studio number is 469-0500, and we're speaking today about the family cow. So what about life expectancy? 20 years? 30 years?
Well, 20 years.
Isn't it really?
I've seen dairy farmers that have cows that are 20 years old, yeah.
In a commercial dairy, the yes. life expectancy is more like 6, isn't it?
Well, I've seen some guys that have them. Well, no, I'm saying 20. I mean 10. No, I think I mean 20. Yeah.
Yeah. So.
For a family cow, yeah.
For yes. a family cow that's but well cared for. And,
yeah,
and
but right. some of our organic dairy farmers, I've seen them have cows that are that old.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And how old did you say your cow was, Christine?
I think she's 9 or 10.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe 11. I don't really know.
But she's still going strong.
She's still going strong, yeah.
Yeah, right. And what does one do every year if you're going to freshen the cow? You're going to have an offspring,
right?
Right. Mm-hmm. So what does one do with those?
Well, it kind of depends on its sex.
Oh, you're going to build up a herd here?
You know, the females, of course, are worth something as another milker, but the males... You know, there's the joke about, it's kind of like the accordion jokes where you can leave one in your car and another one shows up kind of thing if it's not locked. You know, they're, at least with Jerseys, they're not really prized for meat. And when the last time I had a cow, I mean, my cow was bred and her baby didn't survive, I got a free male cow from a Jersey herd. Because they just are a dime a dozen. They don't really want them. The farmers, mm-hmm. the dairy farms have trouble getting rid of them all, I believe. And so I raise them up for about a year and a half, and I don't understand why there's a problem. They give wonderful meat.
Oh, yeah. And actually, Jersey meat is actually one of has the most fat in it. You know, we call it the layering of fat in the meat.
The marbling.
Thank you. I'm drawing a blank. Yes, it's actually very well marbled meat. It's
like, yeah.
So it's delicious.
My family's tickled because, you know, my husband and I got married, I was a vegetarian, and because I did most of the cooking, we were vegetarians, and now we're like inundated with so much meat, it's not even funny, and they're just thrilled.
So the meat from that one cow will keep your family in a good amount of meat.
Absolutely.
What age do you raise it to?
Well, the last few cycles, she's given birth in the summertime, so a year and then through to the fall.
Mm-hmm.
So
We usually go 2 years.
Uh-huh.
1.5 to 2.
Yeah.
And so what do you do with your offspring, Megan?
Oh, if it's a steer, it's for beef for the family, and that that does for our family for plenty of beef,
mm-hmm.
Along with if we have pork as well. And if they're a heifer, then you've got a heifer for sale.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So obviously one could keep the heifer and build up the herd,
that's
but then they'd
right.
have...
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm doing. I'm
always
holding
a
on.
Temptation.
Yeah, I know. I'm holding on to my heifer because it's the first calf I've had, and I have had some issues getting my girl bred. So
yeah.
So I'm like hedging my bets to hold on to this calf and
yeah.
see if I can mm-hmm. get her bred when she's ready, and then maybe decide what to do with Subi. But if she just got bred a couple days ago, and the guy that did the AI on her said it was the best he'd ever felt her inside, and she was very receptive. So hopefully it's going to work. Fingers crossed.
We just brought a bull onto the farm.
Ah, huh.
John O'Meara. I was joking with him one day. Did he have a bull? Because I had one who was hard to breed.
Uh huh. Oh, that's great.
He said, oh, well, as a matter of fact, he did. And it was one he had been training to raise as an ox.
So oh.
This young fella had a lot of handling and, you know, knew how to follow directions even.
Yeah. Oh, that's great.
He's a doll.
Yes.
Just a doll. So.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
we're talking, I just want to remind folks that we're talking about the family cow, and we welcome your calls, your questions, and your comments. The number here in the studio is 469-0500. Again, 469-0500 if you have any questions about the family cow. So Megan brought in someone to breed. You did artificial insemination?
I did. I didn't do it.
You had somebody come in?
Yeah, I've gone to the classes, but I don't feel competent enough to
mm-hmm.
to get in there and feel it.
And what do you
well
do?
Enough.
Do you have a bull that comes in, or
I've tried it all, and mm-hmm. what seems to work best for us is to bring her to a neighbor's farm that keeps a bull.
Mm-hmm.
When
mm-hmm.
she's in heat, I'll just run her down for at his milking
nice.
Time, and
so you just load her up in a trailer and take her
right.
down.
Yep.
And the gestation period is
same as people,
9 months. So. And you were mentioning to me earlier that how long does the cow, like, dry up? These are all new terms for me, so if I'm not saying them correctly, please steer me in the right direction.
Well,
yeah.
Usually you dry them up for 2 months. That just gives them a break so that they have a chance to kind of regroup and get their fat levels up where they should be and
mm-hmm.
and be healthy before you start milking them again.
Mm-hmm.
I think you can also look at, like, the last time it was in the middle of the summer and she was on so much green grass and she was giving a lot of milk, and I let her go for until about a month before she was due.
Right.
Due,
yeah.
And she seemed to be fine, so I think you have to kind of look at the big
so
picture.
So everything's kind of like the time of the year, the feed they're on, but it's all sort
and
of
and also their level of production.
I
you don't want to
yeah.
dry them off when they're producing a whole lot of milk because it would really be uncomfortable and you'd be more likely to have a lot of mastitis problems.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's all those things sort of you take into consideration.
Mm-hmm.
And then once the calf is born, do you have to have a midwife, or do they just...
Not usually, no. They kind of know what to do.
They know what they're doing, right?
Yes, yeah. Yeah, well, it was really funny because I'm supposed to really know what I'm doing here, and then I... my cow, you know, it's like I went down, okay, you know, I went down in the morning, yes, she's going to have her calf today, you know, it's like, okay, so this is going to take a while, so I'm not really too concerned yet. I put my hand inside her vulva, and I could not feel any feet or anything, you know, so it's like, okay, she's not really ready quite yet, and I'm not going to worry. So I went up to the house to get a cup of tea, and my husband went down to look at her and watch and see what was going on, and he'd say, oh, come on, you got to hurry up and come back down. You got to hurry up and come back down. And I, you know, oh, no, I'm all right, you know, it's okay. Well, by the time I got back down, he had already helped the cow have her calf, and it wasn't, you know, like maybe 10 minutes. So
she went that quickly.
She went very fast, and, of course, that was great because he got to have her.
Oh, that's good.
Help her out.
There's usually no problems. If there are, then...
If there are, then it depends. I mean, you don't want to, like, they break, you know, have their water break the same way any other animal does. And if that takes, and it's, you know, like hours and nothing else is happening in the cow.
What's the rule of thumb for hours?
I knew you were going to ask me that because when you started to say it, yeah, probably like
12 hours.
Yeah,
12 hours.
And even that, that's kind of pushing it. So because you don't want her to get too dried out inside either. So.
I had one ancient cow. She started to present a calf backwards.
Oh.
And so the back feet came out first. So I made the decision, I'm just going to help pull it out, and it wasn't a big deal, and she was fine. But I could have just left her to do her own thing, but I thought, you know, considering that nobody knows how old this cow is, maybe I'll give her a hand.
Yes, yeah.
That was the best deal we ever... That was the best economic decision we ever made about a cow. This was, her name was Deary. Her name was Dia, but I can't pronounce that because I'm not from Western Maine. So I called her Deary. She was sold to me by a nice guy who bought her from someone who didn't know how old she was, and this in between fellow. He didn't know how old she was. So when she came here, she had to be 18 or 20. And we paid $285 for her, which she returned to us. She paid herself off in like 2 or 3 months in milk products and then lived another 2 years and gave us a calf.
Well, that was a very valuable little cow.
if you could have, she was an old style Jersey, and if you could have cloned any cow, I would say clone that cow, because she lived forever. She was a sweet thing that gave a lot of milk for no trouble. She didn't lose weight on less than abundant grain. You know what I mean? You didn't have to grain her heavy to keep her from wasting away. But she's gone. Yeah.
Well, folks, we're waiting for your calls. If you have any questions on the family dairy, it's 469-0500 here in the studio. And this is WERU, your community radio, 89.9 in Blue Hill, 99.9 in Bangor, and streaming worldwide at weru.org. Again, the number in the studio, 469-0500. And this morning, we're speaking with three lovely milkmaids about the family cow.
I can't let it go with all these birth stories being easy, because I haven't had that experience.
Ah, okay. Good to hear.
I think it's mostly because of the Jersey breed. Mm-hmm. They're pretty prone to milk fever, which is calcium imbalance in the cows when they're giving birth. And if I had a nickel for every time our large animal vet rolled his eyes and went, "Jerseys, ugh." I think if he was Russian, he would spit every time. Anyway, we almost lost Maggie the last time, not this past time, but the previous freshening. I came down at 3 in the morning, and she was in the stall lying on her side in a puddle of pre-birth. And I hadn't had a lot of experience with birthing at that point. I still don't, but I'm two up on that one anyway. And, 3 in the morning, do you call the vet or not? And my husband was out of town, and I was feeling pathetically alone.
Yeah.
And so I ended up calling her vet and couldn't resist going, "And I'm all alone." And he came out, I had some calcium. I was chicken about starting an IV on her, although I used to work as a paramedic and had some experience doing it, and just coincidentally had spoken to a fellow that worked at the health food store about starting IVs on cows during this time, and she was on her side, and all her milk veins were right there, and after humming and hawing and trying some other things unsuccessfully, we started a line and put some calcium into her, and that did nothing. And then, the whole time I'm saying, "Don't go to the light, stay away," and, giving all sorts of encouragement. And just as Dr. Pete, our vet, arrived, she stood up like, "Oh, what's the fuss about? What's the problem?" It's just miraculous what calcium does for milk fever.
Yeah.
Well, just 1 second. I think we actually have a call on the line.
Okay. Yeah.
Yes, good morning. Could you state your name and where you're calling from, please?
Yeah, hi, it's Frank in Lemoyne.
Good morning, Frank.
Not to spill any sour milk, but I was wondering, you all have, like one cow or two cows. What's your guys, you ladies' spin on the Farmer Brown, don't sell your milk to your neighbor situation going on here in Maine. And I'll hang up and listen to you talk about that offline.
All right. Well, thank you, Frank, for your call.
I knew we were going to get some questions about that, and it is a very important issue, and I think we're all really concerned about it because we're all kind of balancing this fine line with, because we have, most of us have a little bit more milk than we need unless you've got a big family, so what exactly you do with it. It's a good question, but it's not, we're not going to try to talk about that today, not to say that it's not very important, but I think we're going to try to let that go and maybe we'll do a call-in on it or some other time. But we need to let the powers that be know that we're really concerned about it because it is, for me to try to put in a commercial kitchen to deal with the milk from, you know, when I get a gallon a day economically, it's just not very feasible. I'd have to think about doing a whole lot more in order to be able to pay for that. So. Not to say that it's not important.
No, it's not. But really the focus we're trying to work on today is if your family is interested in having the cow for your family consumption. Mm-hmm. So I thank you for that call. And Diane, you were going to mention something.
About Christine, if you try CalcFos as a homeopathic remedy before she's ready to calf, or defreshen, that might be a good thing to try because Jerseys, yes, they do get milk fever quite readily. What happens is that the animal is putting so much calcium into to produce the milk that they actually take it out of their own system and their levels get really low and they can't metabolize it out of their bones quick enough. And calcium is very important in muscle, the innervation, the electrical system in the muscles. Mm-hmm. So that's how come they end up going down like that.
And that's why we have Dexter.
Yes. Yeah.
So it's because I lost a couple over the years, and it's just too much of a heartbreak.
Yes. Yeah.
I think someone who a family who wanted the butter from the Jersey breed, but wanted a smaller amount of milk and a kind of a more relaxed, less health problem breed. I would go with a Jersey Dexter cross, a Jersey Devon cross, a Shorthorn Jersey cross.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How much?
We've got another call on the line right now. Great. And good morning. Could you state your name and where you're calling from, please?
Yes, my name is Jim. I live in Garland. I've milked either one or two Jersey cows for 38 years. We basically have a grassland farm and have about 60 head of sheep, but the cows have always been a great joy. Early on in having them, it was very easy to sell milk to neighbors, but in the last decade or so, there's less demand for it. I really enjoyed your program. The questions about milk fever are interesting in that I've had experience with that. I had one cow actually go down three different times. We've never lost a Jersey to milk fever, and I've learned to give them a calcium paste just before they're going to calve. You kind of know when they're getting ready. Of course, their udders swelled up. I find that Jersey cows are... they're the epitome of motherhood. They are very smart. If the gate is unlatched and still shut, they'll know that. I've seen them sit in a pasture and eyeball coyotes and get up and chase them off. They're just they're very interesting animals to be around. Your comment about Jersey beef, though, I didn't really agree with that. We've eaten a lot of Jersey beef, purebred Jersey beef, and have found it to be quite lean. In fact, when we would sell some to other people, we would warn them that that's what it's going to be. We feed a little bit of grain, but mostly we feed good hay, and they have really good pasture during the spring and summer and fall. You can control the amount of milk that you get by what you feed. I've been able to raise, with one Jersey cow, its calf and two pigs to slaughter weight, and plus have enough milk for ourselves and a neighbor. I started with a cow in 1976, and it was an older cow, and then I bought a cow in 78, and I have the same line, so even today, that cow's out of that line from 1978, and it's old-style Jersey.
That's great.
Kind of small. They don't really need a lot of grain. And the other thing I'd like to mention is in 1975, a woman, I think, who lives in Maine, Joanne Grauman.
Oh, yes, thank you. I was going to mention her.
It's called Keeping a Family Cow, and it's just it's like the Bible for for having a cow. And I ran across her name not too long ago. I think she's living in Maine.
Yes, we've had her come. She's come to the Common Ground Fair to speak for us a couple times.
And I think the biggest problem that I've had over the years is getting my cow bred back, and I've done it a lot of different ways. Artificial was the first way, and I finally decided that I wasn't going to do that anymore. It was difficult to catch it just at the right time, and the man from the artificial insemination company would come, and when he came the third time, he said, I'm going to own this cow before you get her bred. And so I thought, well, I'm not going to do that again. So we've used a variety of bulls. We've used Herefords. We've used Brown Swiss. But we like Jerseys. My biggest problem, though, has been having a Jersey bull here on the farm trying to get my cow bred. And they're very temperamental. Sometimes they can be the nicest ones one day, and the next day they're just as mean as the devil, and they can be very dangerous. And that's my biggest problem, and so I'm kind of conscious of that. And thank you for the program.
Well, Jim, thank you very much for that enlightening phone call. It's nice to have another fellow out there with some family cows.
Yeah.
So, I think we have time maybe for one more call here in the studio. We're talking about the family cow, and our telephone line here is 469-0500. And, geez, Diane, that's interesting to know. Calcium paste.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the other thing that's a recommended practice, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And you can do that beforehand, so that kind of alleviates having the problem.
Okay, great. We have one more caller on the line. Could you state your name and where you're calling from, please?
Yeah, hi, it's Margaret. I'm calling from Rockland.
Good morning.
Hi. Just a plug for the Jersey cow. I know a local cheesemaker around here is using only Jersey cow milk, organic Jersey cow milk for her cheese. So, yay to Jerseys. Let's keep those Jerseys
around. Let's keep those Jerseys going, right? Great.
Thanks so much.
Oh, thank you for your call.
Oh, I don't know. I'm quite fond of my milking Devon cow, and she does give a whole lot of cream, too. Once I dried the calf off once I weaned the calf off of the cow, and now I'm getting all the milk, it doubled in the amount of cream. It's quite amazing. It's so thick now that I don't really like to drink it unless I skim it a little bit, which is great because I'm making lots of butter.
I like butter. We like things like
yes,
that.
Yes, it's nice to have all this homemade butter to slather on my toast and say, ha, 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 cholesterol be darned.
Well, is there anything else that you folks would like to share before we wrap up today? No? I want to thank you all for joining us.
Just don't forget about Joanne Grauman's book, The Family Cow. She's a local Maine lady, and it's a great book. And she has a website, too.
The website is wonderful.
Yes.
Oh, thank you all. Thank you, Megan. Thank you, Christine. Thank you, Diane. Thank you, folks, for joining us. This has been Mofka's Common Ground. And please be sure to join us next month on the first Friday. It would be March 2nd. And we're going to be talking about maple syrup. Yeah, it's a great time of year, so maybe we can save a little of that cream, make some ice cream, put a little maple syrup on it. So, and for those of you, this has been Common Ground, Mofka's hour-long discussion about food and local agriculture, and we've been talking today about the family cow, and I want to thank you all for being with us.
Support for WERU comes from Maine Farmland.